Now, by recording from New York, WETA Radio presents Gene Shepherd. Oh, gang, do I have some lyrics to that one, I'll tell you. Learned them in Company K, and we used to do it to Cadence. Tiptoe through the... And then it went on from there. But if you're over 21 and a guaranteed bona fide art student, we'll send the lyrics to you, and you can amuse and mystify your friends. And, of course, it's all good research.
Bring it up, babe. Bring it up.
La ta ti ti di ti 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 ti. La ta da ta ta ta. Time marches on. That's it. All right. They hung there on the edge of the train. It wasn't Carl. That was the thing there. It's all right.
Yes, time marches on. The great camera of time now moves on its great swivel socket on the great tripod of existence and picks up mankind as he struggles his way through this veil of tears. Yes, time marches on. And you, by God, are there for a little part of it anyway. Every week at the same time, this concerned station brings you a review of the times you live in. And we call it, cleverly, Time Marches On. It's part of our big public service program, and also one of the sponsors likes it, so you know what a sponsor's like. Floodwaters today roared out over Hackensack, New Jersey. Thousands were homeless, and the Red Cross was on the scene, bringing safety and help to the unfortunate victims. Thousands were homeless as the raging Hackensack River roared out of its banks. Subsides. We now take you down to Miami Beach, where bathing beauties are celebrating the new fashions. Yes, this little lovely is illustrating the new cellophane bikini, which is sweeping the southern resorts with tremendous effect. Whoops, my dear. Under the sparkling Florida sun, the cuties parade. And now one is going to actually take a dip. Look at that, backward, right out of the water and back on, right on that old diving board. And as the sun slants down over historic Churchill Downs, we are once again ready for the running of the 243rd Great Run for the Roses, the Kentucky Derby, and they are off. They come charging out of the gate. Number 7, I'm a Fink, takes the lead. Here comes Blue Pickle coming up on the outside. He's trailing by one quarter length as they hit the 2/16th ball. And now they're coming into the last turn, and they're in the final 16th. And once again, another winner is crowned in the historic winner's circle. And Churchill Downs, Blue Pickle, wins. Time marches on.
Okay, all right. I just thought I have to keep in practice here now. You, I feel it my duty, you see, as a commentator on the scene, as an artist, to report on what is actually happening in our time. And I've noticed one fascinating thing about New York City. For those of you who are outside of New York, you may be encouraged when you hear this. It's something you've always suspected, but as a New Yorker, I have come to believe it's true. New York, in the 70s, is no longer the avant-garde of America. Well, I'm not here to say what is. We're talking about the fact that New York is no longer. New York is now probably 2 to 3 years behind the rest of the country in almost every given development. In short, if you go out of town, and you go out someplace, many places, not just one city. See, we're used to having one city be the avant-garde. There's no such thing as a one-city avant-garde any longer. It's just that the country has moved ahead, and New York has maintained its same old thing. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's good or bad. We're making the value judgment. But here's a classic example. All of a sudden, New York Magazine has discovered that the barter system has come back. They have a big article this particular issue about the barter system. Well, do you know that 2 years ago, New York Magazine, I reported that on this very program after having come back from out of town where it's been a flourishing institution. Do you know how it works? Many of you don't know how it works. Well, you think you do. I think you think a lot of things about yourself that aren't necessarily true, friend. and I'm saying the most guys think that the barter system means you got something, you go to the other guy, and you trade him for what he's got, right? Well, then how does the barter system work? You don't know what the hell you're talking about. The barter system works this way, as it works really in an organized system outside of New York. And it has not yet propped up in New York. At least it's not been really reported in New York, but it's a going thing. So here's the way it works. A friend of mine has a business, you see. Well, I'll tell you what he does. He sells cars. Now, he lives at least 2,000 miles from New York. So it's a long way from here. And the city he's in is a medium-sized city. I'd say it's probably, give or take, 50,000. It's probably 400,000 people. It's a fairly decent-sized city, and there's a few suburbs all around it. And he's got this place. See, he sells cars. Well, this was 2 years ago now that this happened. Well, so one day I'm sitting in there. I was going out in the country doing a show somewhere, so I took the chance to go and visit him. And so I'm sitting in this office. I'm sitting there with Frank, and Frank says to me, he says, hey, he said, you know, he said, boy, I'm glad to talk to you. You know, you're from New York. He said, once in a while you guys come in from New York, you know, you've got all the latest stuff, what's happening. I said, well, let's see what's happening. You know, the latest things, like New York is again reviving a 1922 musical that was already hackneyed in 1922 because it was a copy of a 1903 musical which was stolen from an 1822 play. New York is really on top of it. It's always creating new things. And he laughed. And he says, no, he says, I'll tell you. He says, we got this thing going out here. I just was curious whether they have it out there. And I says, what? He says, well, I'll tell you. He says, a funny thing. He says, I don't know. It doesn't sound legal or something. He says, but this is the way it works. I said, well, what do you think? He closes the door. So he says, well, here's the way it works. He says, a couple of weeks ago, he said, I got a call from one of my buddies who's in the business here in town. This guy's got a clothing store or something. So he says, he calls up and he says, listen, he said, Frank, we're going to have a meeting, all of us guys in business here in town, and it's about the organization. He says, what organization? He says, what's about an organization? Do you want to join an organization? Frank says, what? What organization? He says, well, come to the meeting and you'll find out. He says, I don't want to say anymore. So Frank says, okay. So he goes to the meeting, and here they are. They're all sitting around. They bring in, they have coffee, and they have Danish, and it looks like any other meeting of the junior JCs or something. You know, they get up, and they, a couple of guys give a speech about the new member that's here and all that stuff. And so finally, they get down to the meat of what it is. And here's what it is. He says they're organizing this thing. And there are about 25, 30 guys in town. And that, now these guys sell everything from clothing to plumbing jobs. Some guys do electrical work. Other guys sell buttons. And all these different companies. They, okay. So they get together in this organization. And what the organization does is this. You can go to any other organization member, if you're a member, of course. This is not the public. This is a guy with a business. If Frank sells cars, right? Let's assume that Frank decides that what he needs is a plumbing job on his house, and so he goes to a plumber who is a member of the. Now he does not trade him for a car. That's where you're wrong, Larry. He goes to the plumber, and the plumber then he tells him what he needs. He says, I tell you what I need. I need this whole new bathroom rebuilt. I need a bathtub. I'd like to have this new sink put in. And I want a whole job there. So he says, well, okay, we'll send out Fred. Fred will give you an estimate. So Fred goes out and he gives him an estimate. Let's say it's $4,000. And at that point, Frank says, well, okay, $4,000. That's good enough. All right. So when can you start? He says, well, we can start next Monday. And so, by God, next Monday, the plumbers show up with the soldering irons and the wrenches. And at that point, now you'd say, well, does the plumber come over and get a car then? No. What if he doesn't need a car? No, not at all. $4,000 then goes on the credit side of that particular plumber's list in the organization. That means he's got $4,000 now coming from anyone. So then the plumber decides, let's say he decides he needs a new suit. Okay? So he goes down to the suit guy. And he says to the guy, hey, that's not a bad little set of rags there, buddy. He says, how much is that? He says, well, that's 185 bills. He said, but, you know, you're a friend of mine. It'll be only 125. He said, and we'll do the all the rations on it. After all, you're only 3 feet 9 inches tall, and that's a 78 regular. So we'll cut it down. And he says, very good. And so he gets fitted for the suit. And then at that point, the suit guy then has $125 in credit. And so the whole thing works. Round and round and round it goes. And each guy pays, by the way, a certain amount of money to be in this thing every month. He just pays a nominal fee, like $100. And so that means they're taking in $2,500 a month. So if this guy, let's say the plumber, all of a sudden is strapped for cash and he's got $3,000 credit, see, and he says, gee, I'm really uptight. He goes to the association and says, okay, well, I'd like to get mine back in cash now. And he says, at that point, they give him the cash, but he remains in the organization. And nobody actually buys anything. In short, it's all done on credit. Not even credit, I'd say barter. Now, that's the barter association. Now, did you ever hear of a thing like that? No, I mean, really. Yeah, that is all over the country. Now, why do they do this? Well, they do it for a number of reasons. The barter system basically implies different needs. There would be no need, or there would be no barter at all if, for example, everybody wanted the same thing. Okay? Now, as we get more sophisticated, though, our needs change. So when you were a kid, I mean, the idea of getting a couple of Twinkies was a real big deal. But then as you get a little bit older, you see, you begin to think really seriously of, say, things like Chivas Regal, which never occurred to you at the age of 6. If it did, you really got a liver problem by now. But nevertheless, you know, you begin to look around, see, for things. Well, I one day, just out of the blue, I developed this fantastic interest in something that none of the other guys that I knew were interested in, namely electronics. Now, the other guys, you know, they turned on the radio once in a while. That's about it. But they never thought in terms of technical things. They never thought in terms of what's in the radio, see. And it was this barter system, by the way, that led to my first true experience in crime. I don't know whether I even ought to tell you this story, but you're listening. No, this is serious crime I'm talking about. I'm not talking about fun little kid stuff. No, this got to be a very serious problem, and I was a member of a ring. Now, how did it happen? Well, I'll tell you how it happened. I was about in sixth or seventh grade when I began to get this fantastic interest in electronics. Where it started, I don't know. Nobody else in my family was into this. And I just suddenly, it got me. It got me like heroin. And when you get into electronics, you see, I'm telling you, electronics at a certain age can really be an unbelievable fix. Can you imagine 8th grade kids hiding down in a basement arguing about antenna theory? Well, it's a thing that scientists today are arguing about. You know, the antenna is one of the great mysteries and one of the great areas of tremendous research even to this day. The big dish antennas, all this antenna theory, radiation. And we'd sit down there and argue about this. See, well, this, of course, like all religious fanaticisms, ultimately led, let's say, to crime. You know, religious fanatics often become inquisitors. Oh, yes. What do you think the Inquisition was about? An excess of zeal leads you to ultimately lop off heads. And this is an old, established human problem. And so what started out as an innocent scene down in a basement wound up with something far different. And it all came about through barter. And here's how it happened. There was this fantastic diagram that appeared in one of the major electronic magazines for a very, very sophisticated oscillator, an RF oscillator. Not an audio oscillator, an RF oscillator. Better listen carefully. Don't confuse your terms. In this, when you're dealing with a science, terms are exact. So say, yeah, we got an oscillator. It makes beeping sounds. No. This is an RF oscillator. Now, what is an RF oscillator? Well, no. Don't start with the hands. All oscillators make a wavy. Say that's an audio too. So don't confuse the issue, please. Stay back in your own area of expertise. An RF oscillator is a transmitter. You hear what I'm saying? It's a radio transmitter, basically. Well, there were a lot of them around, but this one was very sophisticated. It got a lot of... In fact, what it was a... For those of you who are ham types out there, it was a 6L6 pentode, the beam power oscillator that had great secondary transmission characteristics. In other words, with a 40-meter crystal, you could get almost as much out on 20 meters as you could on 40. And with a 40-meter crystal, you could triple... down to 10 and get fantastic output even on 10 with this oscillator. So, you know, we were really into it. So, but the only problem was that none of us had a 6L6. You know, this can stop you. It's like getting hung up on a Mercedes and nobody's got a Mercedes, you know. You can look at just so many pictures and the hell with it. Well, now, I don't know whether you know the average finances of the average kid in eighth grade. You just don't go to your old man and say, you know, I want this cash because I want to go out and buy a 6L6. First of all, he didn't know what a 6L6 was. If you went and said, I'm going to go out and buy a Fielder's Mitt, he'd understand it. You know, he'd give you the dough. But a 6L6, I mean, what is this? So... Anyway, we're sitting around down there and talking about getting a 6L6 and how we'd like to build this thing, see? And so at that point, one of our members, I will not... all right, I'll tell you who it was. It was Bolas, right? Bolas was always the guy that did everything first, see? So Bolas says, all right, listen, he says, look, and he was into electronics. Now, Flick was not there. Schwartz was not there. There was a crowd you never heard of because these were all electronics kids, a very different gang. Stanley Roper was there. Johnny Anderson was there. These were electronic kids. Raleigh Harlan was there. You never heard of Raleigh, right? So we're all sitting around. See, we're the electronics gang. Now, I kept this crowd very separate from Schwartz and Flick, which was this, you know, knocking out flies gang. So I'm sitting there when all of a sudden Bolas says, all right, he says, I'll get a 6L6. And at that point, Roper says, where are you going to get it? He says, what do you offer me for a 6L6? I'll get you a 6L6. And so at that point, Roper says, I'll tell you what I'll offer you for a 6L6. He says, you know that gain condenser I got, that Hammerlund? 140 micro-microfarad gain condenser with the low-loss isolantite insulator, with the low-loss insulation, that one I got from Allied Radio? And Bola says, yes, I do know, as a matter of fact. That was a little item that went for about maybe $7 or $8, and it was highly prized. Roper says, I'll tell you what, that triple gang 140 micro-microfarad Hammerlund condenser is yours if you could get me a 6L6. Now, I'll tell you this. If you bring me a 6L6 that's burned out or has low emission, forget it, because I'm going to get it tested. Do you think I would give you the business? I mean, after all. And Stanley says, okay. Baldus says, all right, tomorrow night, you got a 6L6. Little did any of us realize this opened a whole new chapter. Because, you know, up to a certain point, you know, your mind is bound by the conventions of your upbringing. Now, the conventions of most of our upbringing is, if you want some candy, you go down to the store and you give the guy a nickel and you get candy. Okay? Sure enough, the next night, I'm down in Johnny Anderson's basement, and there is me and Stanley Roper, and we're fooling around with Johnny Anderson's volt-ohmist. Now, you don't know what a volt-ohmist... You do, of course, Carl, what a volt-ohmist. We're messing around with the volt-ohmist, see, because we love to play with the volt-ohmist. We love to take Allied radio resistors and figure out how far they were off. You know, you get a 500 mega-ohm resistor, you know, and you put it on a volt-ohmist. It turns out it's only 122 mega-ohms. See, but what you don't know is that your volt-ohmist is is about 4,000 degrees off. So anyway, we're down there playing around. See, we're down into the basement from the basement door, wearing a coat, comes Bolas. And Bolas says, Roper? Roper says, yeah, Bolas. Bolas whips open his coat, reaches inside, pulls out an RCA 6L6. And what's even better, it was an RCA 6L6G, which meant that it was much more practical for using in this transmission device, this oscillator, than the 6L6, which was a metal tube. Roper says, a 6L6! And Bola says, the very same. He says, I'm going to hold this 6L6 right here in my left hand. Bolas was a left-hander. I'm going to hold this in my left hand, right here in the basement. You go home. I will wait right here. You come back with that triple gang, isolantite insulate. It's got to have low-loss insulation. Hammerlund, three-gang, 140 micro-microfarad condenser, which this very night will go into my single-signal, super-regenerative CW receiver. At which point, Roper tore out of there, leaving a trail of smoke. 5 minutes later, he is back, and the soldering lugs on the 140 micro-microfarad condenser are still hot. He has taken it out of whatever he had it in, and he shoves it over towards Bolas. Bolas takes it in his right hand. He very carefully moves it back. Sure enough, it's in perfect condition. The plates are not rubbing. He holds it up to the light. The spacing is perfect. He hands over to Stanley Roper 1 6L6. Well, naturally, the crowd is agog. Where the hell did he get the 6L6? At that point, Johnny Edison says, listen, Bolas, I don't know where you got the 6L6, but do you know any place where I can get a 6J7? 6SJ7, perhaps? Bolas says, when do you want it? Johnny says, well, when could you get it? He says, how about tomorrow night? Well, at that point, a deep mystery developed. Bolas seemed to have an absolute, total control over a mysterious source of highly sophisticated tubes. All new, all RCA. 2 weeks go by, and there's a lot of trading in tubes. I personally picked up a 6C5. I picked up a 6SJ7. I picked up a 6H6. Now, if you know what a 6H6 is, this is a diode rectifier. Very sophisticated, too. And I'm in business. And what am I trading? Well, I traded a pair of my old man's cufflinks. Yes, of course, crime knows no morality. You must understand that we're involved in crime. I traded off my kid brother's aluminum Zeppelin. Why not? What the hell? I mean, what does he know? What do you mean? I mean, this is crime. A criminal has to finally get to be very, very hardened about others' feelings. There's no such thing as others' feelings. And one late night, Bullis let us in on what he was doing. And instantly we fanned out over the city, and each one of us began his own operation. How did it work? Maybe I better not tell you. No, I better not tell you. Our gang of tube thieves operated so successfully that within 3 months, there was a major piece on the front page of the local paper. It said, "Area merchants distressed over electronic thefts." It says an organized band of radio tube thieves has been operating in the area. It says not only are they radio tube thieves, it appears to be a highly sophisticated gang who always zeroes in on the most expensive and the least obtainable radio tubes. It is believed that this gang is working as an organized group out of Chicago. And at this point, it is in the hands of federal attorneys, since it involves interstate commerce. Bum, ba-dum, bum. We held a meeting that night in Johnny Anderson's basement. The band of 6SJ7 thieves was disbanded. Since by now we were all very well equipped, we were doing very well on 40 meters. Personally, I was also doubling to 20. By now I had a pair of 6L6s and push-pull. How do we do it? Well, it is not my purpose here to instruct you in larceny. Now, I should have a bad conscience, right? I know I should. I'm not going to say any more. Do I sound like I have a bad conscience? Yes. After all, an artist, a scientific investigator, cannot let petty obstacles get in the way of his ultimate discovery or his ultimate kick. Or his ultimate sin. And so the barter system, incidentally, is not as simple and as honest and basically reliable as it sounds. By the way, Attila the Hun was involved in the barter system. That's the subject for a future show next semester when you're a little grown up.
By recording from New York, you've been listening to Gene Shepherd. Join us again next Wednesday evening at 6:00.